Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the TC and Company podcast. Tom Caron with you as the Red Sox continue to try to figure it out. They returned home, first home game of August, and it was picking right back up where they were on the road. A horrific loss to open up the series to Tampa Bay. Four runs in the ninth inning after a couple runs in the seventh inning and another come from behind. The Rays have scored more runs from the seventh inning on than any team in Major League Baseball. And the Red Sox bullpen that has been so good for so long this season certainly seems like it's paying the price for being overworked. You know, we know the starters haven't gone very deep over the course of this season, and you can't help but wonder if that workload now is why the bullpen is faltering. But they will go at it again Wednesday night in Game 2, the series continuing through Thursday afternoon. Chris Sale on the horizon. That's good news. Another guy on the horizon, a little further down the road, is Tristan Casas, ranked by some as the top prospect in the organization. The first baseman just won a silver medal with Team USA at the Olympics, going 5-for-23 with three homers and eight runs batted in. He was on the All-Olympic team. Jack Lopez, another Red Sox prospect on that USA team as well. And the coach of that team, or one of the coaches on that team, third base coach for the U.S. Olympic team, was Darren Fenster. Now, Darren is the Red Sox minor league outfield and base running coach. He's been a manager in the minor league system as he's moved up through the ranks. Greenville, he was manager for 4 years, and then he spent a year as manager of the Portland Sea Dogs, where Tristan Casas now plays. Now, Darren was returning from the Olympics to ease back into his role as the minor league coach, going through all levels of the system, working on the outfielders and the base running aspect of it. But as soon as he landed, he got the notice that he was being summoned to Boston. He is one of the two coaches, along with Andy Fox, helping fill in the void. Will Venable and Tom Goodwin, two coaches that are quarantining in Toronto. And if you've spent any time reading about Canada, their protocols are very, very strict. The fines are ridiculously high if you break quarantine, even to leave the country. Will Venable testing positive. Tom Goodwin deemed a close contact. So no word. It could be a full 14-day quarantine for those two Red Soxmen. Close contact with it, of course. But Darren Fenster got about 11 hours at home after his Olympic experience, got to do a couple of loads of laundry, and then was at Fenway Park for the opener of the series out on the field. So he joins me on this week's podcast to talk about what he has seen in his early day or two with the big league team as they try to come out of that funk, and what the Olympics were like, and more importantly for the future of the Red Sox, what he learned about Tristan Casas over in Japan. So Darren, thanks for joining us. We'll just begin with the obvious. Are you awake? How are you feeling? I mean, are you back on any kind of normal schedule yet?
Probably not on any normal schedule, but you know, I said this yesterday when I got to the ballpark, when the major league team calls you, you answer the phone. And, you know, they needed Foxy and I up here because of the circumstances going on with Goody and Will. And, you know, so we're here and we're just trying to play our part to help these guys. So, you know, I'll get back on schedule in plenty of time. I'm not worried about that.
So we'll work backwards. Take me through that journey first. You get back in the U.S. thinking the Olympics. Now you can rest a little bit, get back to your normal schedule. When did you find out that the assignment had changed?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a whirlwind experience that probably hasn't really set in just yet. So we leave Tokyo time Monday afternoon around 5 o'clock. And then, you know, 12 hours later, it's 5 o'clock in New Jersey time. And I turn my phone back on and there was a message waiting for me from our farm director, Brian Abraham, saying, hey, with everything going on in with Goody and Will in Toronto, we need you and Andy to kind of head up to Fenway tomorrow morning. So, you know, there was no questions asked. I said, all right, you know, I'll be there. So I booked a flight, had 11 hours at home, and you know, here we are, and you know, trying to play my part to help these guys here in Boston.
Just you know, so you know the respect the organization has for you, and go through this right now. Chaim Bloom was on the show last night And I brought up easing Tristan Cassis back into his routine. And he goes, well, he's got it a lot easier than Darren Fencer has. We can give him a day off, but we need to throw Darren right into it. So no doubt the organization appreciates it. It's kind of a weird situation with Will Venable and Tom Goodwin quarantining up there right now. You get thrown into the mix last night. And you know, obviously I'm not going to ask for any state streak secrets, anything happened behind closed doors, but I think fans want to know, what's the psyche of this team? We know they're struggling. For you to come in from the outside, how did you feel about where this team's head is at right now?
You know, I thought the vibe was great in the dugout, and, you know, unfortunately things didn't work out last night, but I think these guys are professional enough, and Alex is such a great leader that, you know, they've been through this before of playing meaningful games deep into the summer. And obviously they're in a little bit of a rut right now, but you know, the idea of every day being a new opportunity, I think I felt that yesterday, that, you know, if you walked into that clubhouse, you walked into that dugout, you would not have known anything different other than a team that, you know, was ready to compete and play to win. And I'm sure that's going to be the case today and the rest of the season.
I covered AC as a player. And one thing I always said about him then, and one thing I said about him coming back again this year, why I thought he was the perfect guy for this job, is that, you know, he has a way. There's a swagger, a confidence about him, but it's not an ego confidence. It's not an ego-based confidence, right? But he has a way of making players around him feel they're good. I mean, he said that, right? This team needed to hear it spring training. We're good. This is a good team. We got a good group of players. After last year, this team needed to hear that. Did you feel that from Alex? I mean, what is it about Alex that has that ability to bring the most out of his guys?
You know, having gotten to know Alex, you know, since his start here in 2018, I mean, he's one of the best connecting personalities that I've ever been around. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he obviously, you know, speaks Spanish and can connect with the Latin players and speaks English, connects with the English guys, and had a, you know, a really good major league career as a player. There are just so many different levels that he can empathize with guys. And I think he's very real with everyone. And it's not just players that he connects with. I mean, it's coaches as well, where, you know, he really makes everybody around him feel like, hey, you know, he's just one of the guys. He obviously has a very significant role, but I think he's able to put guys at ease and allow them to do their jobs. And whether it be a coach or a player, you know, the game's hard enough as it is. So when you have someone who is a calming influence, like he is in the dugout, you know, I think it allows guys to play free. And, you know, this is a really talented team. And, you know, it's not going to be something where, you know, you're down for that long. And, you know, again, these guys are professionals, and a lot of these guys have been through this sort of thing. So I'm sure, you know, with Alex at the helm and kind of continuing to be enthusiastic and encouraging, I'm sure some point sooner rather than later, you know, they'll come through and, you know, get back to playing the way that they've played for the majority of the season.
All right, let's go back to the Olympics. What was the experience like? Just when you look back on the last month, what are you going to remember most 10 years from now? What's going to stick with you out of that whole experience?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know if I could really put it into words right now, but, you know, first and foremost, it was the people and the group that we had. You know, not just the coaches, not just the players, like our entire delegation, which included, you know, about 8 people from USA Baseball, who comprised, you know, our entire baseball delegation. And, you know, the opportunity to wear USA across your chest in the Olympic Games is just something that, you know, like I grew up, I'm 42 years old. So I grew up in a, you know, a little bit of different generation than, you know, a guy like Tristan Cassis, where the Olympics was a huge deal to me. And I remembered every 4 years, you know, watching sports that I didn't even know existed. And it was just this global event, and there just seemed to be so much national pride that, you know, you never dream about being good enough or ever to be in a position to be in the Olympics, especially in baseball, where like the dream is always to get to the major leagues. But when baseball was, you know, reinstated and we had an opportunity to qualify and to be included on the staff, I mean, it was just such a humbling experience. And you hear the expression, playing for something bigger than yourself. We talk about it all the time as coaches, but the group that we had in Tokyo, as well as the group that we had in Florida that qualified, they embodied that, where I can honestly say every single person in our delegation on our team, we had one thing in mind, and that was to do whatever we could on our end to help our team win. And so a lot of the things that I think you know, you see at other levels, whether it be as amateurs, guys who are trying to play for a scholarship, a college kid who's trying to get drafted, a kid in A-ball who's trying to get to double A or to get to the big leagues. There's always that next step. It's, you know, that might, you know, cloud that particular game. And so the environment of win today, that's the only thing that mattered. Every single person was all about that. It was a really special thing to be a part of. And, you know, the guys here with the Red Sox know how much fun I have, you know, as a coach, how much fun I have being on the field. And so, you know, I told Ben Crockett and Brian Abraham this. I'm like, you know, consider this when I tell you that this was the most fun I've ever had as a coach. And it was the people that made that. And to do it on the Olympic stage was just, you know, icing on the cake.
You know, it's a great point you bring up about the next level. So Portland, Maine, where, you know, you managed the Sea Dogs. I was the play-by-play guy for the hockey team, the Portland Pirates back in the day. And a long, long time ago. But we, you know, I remember I was play-by-play and they were going into the playoffs as the best team in the American Hockey League, had the best record in the entire league. And they got upset in the first round in seven games, the very first round. And this was they were the defending champs. Portland had won it all the year before. So they had every reason, the expectations were they were going to go very deep in the playoffs. And we had a really good young talented team. And I remember being down in the dressing room after, and there were five young players who were talking about their travel plans to join the Capitals for the rest of their playoff run. You know, and so even in a playoff series at that level, at the developmental level, like you said, there's always another agenda. And I'm not saying they were selfish or they didn't give it their all, but you were at a tournament where there is nothing except trying to win that gold medal. And that had to be kind of a unique experience for a guy who's had your progression, college, minor league, where you've been at as a coach.
Yeah, you know, every level is different and every level has its different, you know, sets of focus. And to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't know exactly what this was going to be like heading into it, because this was the first time I had the privilege to be on a USA coaching staff. You know, Mike Socia is the manager, and he described it best coming out of the qualifier, where he said it had the feel of playing five game sevens in the playoffs. You know, so obviously this is a decorated major league manager who's won the World Series. And, you know, we talk about, as coaches, we talk about getting a mindset into players where they understand, hey, every pitch means something, every play means something. But obviously over the course of 140 game season, you're going to have hiccups, but you have time to recover from some of those hiccups. In the qualifier, in the Olympics, you don't really have time to, you know, get over those hiccups. So you feel the importance of every pitch, and you feel the importance of every run that you are able to push across, or every run that you're able to, you know, to prevent, you know, when you're out in the field. So the pressure that was there, you know, first to qualify and then to just, you know, advance into the medal round and to get to the gold medal game. I mean, it was as apparent as can be, but, you know, in a similar way that what Alex is able to do here. I mean, Mike Socia had just an incredible way about, you know, how he handled the group and how he really just emphasized, hey guys, like, let's just play free and, you know, be allowed, you know, we're a talented team. And he constantly, that was a constant message. And he constantly was talking about our end goal, and the guys really embraced that. And I think, you know, we were a couple hits away from coming home with a gold medal instead of a silver. And, you know, I know at the end of that game, guys were really, really disappointed about, you know, not winning the gold medal game. But I think once, you know, they were involved in the medal ceremony, and, you know, once you're able to kind of move away from the last out of the game, I think guys understood the significance of what we were able to accomplish.
My first job was in Lake Placid, where, and it was not long after the 80 Olympics. And so there was so much, you know, a lot of the winter sports were still based out of there. And one of the things I learned right away in reporting is you're never a former Olympian. You're an Olympian. You know, you carry the title Olympian for life. So, you know, I know Tristan Casas says, I didn't want the silver medal. I'm not hanging that on my wall. But, you know, he's an Olympian and will always be an Olympian. Jack Lopez, who made a terrific defensive play there to finish off a game. When these guys look back on that experience, I don't think there's any doubt they're going to be, you know, that's going to rank up there in their lifelong achievements. Tell us about Tristan Casas. Fans have been excited about this guy. And I know, you know, there, a lot of people want to, let's go, bring him back to Boston. Let's throw him right in. I know you got to get back and continue his development. But what can you tell us about this guy that fans may not know?
I mean, he took his game to a whole different level. And I think for him, this was, I think, the third or fourth or fifth time he's competed for the U.S. national team dating back to high school. And it's something that he, that's very, very important to him. And that's, you know, very dear to his heart, because I think this was the start of Tristan Casas kind of coming onto the scene, you know, as a high school kid. And so the opportunity for him to compete for his country and being in that win now, win only environment, that was something different than what I had seen previously of him coming up, because he's as laser focused on getting better as anybody that we have in the organization. There's a purpose behind every single thing this kid does on or off the field to help him get better as a player, to eventually help us, you know, at the major league level. And so to be in this environment where he still had that approach, but now it was all about winning. I mean, he went to a different level that, that we haven't seen, you know, here within our system. And obviously you look at what he's done in a couple of years as a minor leaguer, which is really impressive. So, you know, take that for what it's worth, to say that this guy has raised the bar even for himself, and he holds himself to the highest of standards. And he carried us, you know, he carried us. Him and Tyler Austin were the two guys in the middle of our lineup that, that really put us in a position to win a gold medal. And he won't tell you that because, you know, so many people played a part of it, but when you had someone like him, you know, produce the way that he produced on the stage that he was able to produce on, you know, it just, you know, we were all obviously incredibly excited about his potential in the organization. And I think, you know, coming out of this experience for him, you know, I think that's just, you know, raised our excitement even more, seeing what he was able to do when, you know, when the lights were even brighter.
I know you mentioned that he had the history of Team USA, but playing for an 18U or a 17U team is one thing. You know, playing on a team like this, where Todd Frazier and Scott Kazmir and Edwin Jackson, I mean, these are major league guys with great resumes, playing against, you know, Japanese major leaguers, because they've shut down, right? And you're facing the best of the best. I mean, that had to be a very different experience for a young player.
No question about it. I mean, the mix of our team was very unique. In the sense of what our player pool was, you know, what we had available to us, where anybody on the 40 man was ineligible to be considered. And then once we did find, you know, out of our list of a few hundred guys, we, you know, we kind of did some homework to figure out who were the best fits. And we would ask teams for permission if they could be considered. And, you know, some of those guys were denied permission because they might've been too close to the major leagues or whatever reason. You know, when we have, you have guys like you mentioned with Todd Frazier, David Robertson, Edwin Jackson, guys who have distinguished major league careers, and they're on the tail end of their careers, and guys like, you know, Tristan or Jaron coming out of the qualifier, who, you know, are really at the front end of their career. The experience that that those young guys get to be around those older guys who have done what those guys want to do, is just, you know, so valuable in the preparation. I know Jaron Duran spent so much time with John Jay in the qualifier, and Todd Frazier, and Tristan spent a ton of time with Todd and some other guys, you know, in both. So I think there's nothing that we could have done on the minor league side that could better prepare these guys to be around the guys who we eventually want, you know, Tristan and Jaron and Jack and everybody else who was involved to be. So, you know, the way that Tristan kind of embraced that and took advantage of, you know, being around guys like, you know, like Todd, and being able to pick their brains, and to be around Mike Socha and Dave Wallace and guys, you know, these baseball lifers, you know, Tristan was a sponge in every sense. And so, you know, he left Tokyo really, you know, in just such a great place. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to be way more prepared to be ready to be a big leaguer when that time comes because of the experience.
And to give people a full sense, I mean, I think it was, what I read was, it was the most watched Olympic event in Japan. I mean, this was, in a global event happening in your country, this was the most anticipated. What was it like? And I know there weren't crowds, so that probably limited some of what you felt, but could you feel that? Could you feel what was happening around you?
Yeah, I found that out yesterday, actually, that it was the most watched event in Japan for the entire Olympics. The country is obviously baseball crazy. You know, you see, you know, going back to when Hideo Nomo came here, and now with Shohei Ohtani, and the country, you know, they're waking up in the middle of the night to watch these games and to watch their countrymen compete in, you know, in our league. So, you know, I think all of Japan's games were on their main TV station. So that kind of was just an early indicator of what this meant, you know, for the country. And, you know, they had all the pressure on them, you know, from to win this thing, being that it was on their home soil, the love of the game, you know, all that sort of thing. And to their credit, you know, they got the job done. And, you know, we were, you know, a hit or two away from jumping out on top. And, you know, just fortunately, you know, unfortunately for us, you know, just didn't work out that way. But, you know, you definitely felt the sense that, hey, you know, there was a lot of pressure on Japan to take care of business. And, you know, to their credit, they were able to do that.
You mentioned the baseball lifers, Mike Socha, Dave Wallace, who we had here back in the day when he was pitching coach here. For you, still a relatively young guy in the coaching world, what was it like to be with them for that extended time, to be able to soak up and learn a little bit from them? I got to think that's a little bit of a masterclass in coaching to be around that group.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, just I think seeing how Soch kind of, you know, worked his way around the team and gave ownership to the guys that it was their team. And even, you know, in our case as coaches, like, he's like, hey, this is what we need you to do. Go do it. You know, did not micromanage at all and trusted us to do the job and picked his spots where, you know, he felt like he should step in. And just from a leadership perspective, it was really impressive. And then just his knowledge of the game. I mean, you know, I'm as the base running coordinator here, like it's something I've always been passionate about even before having the role. He was a catcher who I've never met anyone more passionate about base running than him and the detail that he talked about. And the Angels were always renowned for just being a really aggressive base running team. So to hear a lot of his thoughts on, you know, what that did and, you know, how it changed games, you know, it was really interesting to hear that perspective at the major league level, to be able to take back, you know, kind of gives you just some validation for a lot of the things that we're trying to develop on the minor league side. And then just being around, you know, Dave Wallace and a guy by the name of Jerry Weinstein was our first base coach, who unfortunately didn't make the trip to Tokyo, but, you know, he's 78 years old. And, you know, I want to be like this guy when I'm 78 years old in terms of the passion and the energy and the knowledge and all this stuff. And, you know, the ability for these guys who are baseball lifers to still connect with players who are, you know, in some cases, 50 years younger than them, even more in Jerry's case, was just really eye-opening. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the game truly does connect people, and these lifers to be around it, like, you know, the passion that they have, it kind of, you know, it keeps you young in every sense. And, you know, it was just so lucky and so fortunate to be able to be a part of it.
A couple last things I want to hit you. You mentioned base running, and I wanted to ask you about that because I'm talking to AC. They really respect your approach to teaching that part of the game. But it's changed a lot. I mean, you talk about Mike Socha, what they didn't know too wouldn't really translate today, right? Outs are considered more to premium than ever before. So you better be sure if you're trying to grab that extra base, if you're trying to steal a base. And frankly, this team has had a little trouble with that on and off over the course of the season. So how much has that changed, even in the time you've been working with minor leaguers on the running game?
Yeah, no matter what era you're talking about, extra bases are always valuable, you know, and you just have to find that balance of, you know, the situation of when you're trying to get that extra base. And obviously outs are magnified, especially at the major league level. And this was one of the things that Mike and I spoke about was, you know, there were years where with the Angels, they might've run into 30 or 40 outs on the bases, which, you know, I think, you know, it might be a lot. And he would also talk about, yeah, we ran into 30 or 40 outs, but we also got 150 more extra bases than the next closest team or whatever it was. So there, I think he might've used the example of like the A's when they were just first starting to get into Moneyball, and, you know, the A's might run into 5 or 10 outs over the course of a season, but their extra bases for the course of the season were nowhere near what they were. So how many of those extra bases turned into runs? How many of those extra bases turned into, you know, plays where you're putting pressure on the defense to make a play and they're not able to do that. So I think just like with anything else in the game, it's not black and white of, you just run until somebody tags you out, or you only run when you know when you're going to be safe. And that's something that I think on the minor league side, You have to instill it as a mindset with the idea, hey, it's okay to make outs on the bases, but they just have to be good outs. And if it's a bad read, you just have to learn from the read, because you don't want to take away from that, you know, from that approach of being a really aggressive base running team to take advantage of those extra bases when they're there. And hopefully over the course of a guy coming up through the minor league system with the things that we have in place, by the time they get here to Boston, they're smart base runners, they're aggressive base runners, and they're making good decisions. And they're putting ourselves in a position to score more runs, which at the end of the day is what, you know, a good base running team is all about.
All right. And I do want to ask you, and, you know, I know you're going to say all the right things because you're a coach and you're a character guy, but I think it's outrageous that coaches don't get a medal. All right. So let me, I'll be the one to say that. I know you're not going to say that. What is the one prized, most cherished possession? Did you bring something back that's going to go up on the wall? I mean, is there something from this experience that you will have tangibly to look at since you don't get a medal, which is outrageous? I'll say it again.
You know what? Like, I don't know if there's one thing, but we actually had a really unique ceremony before we left, where the North Carolina National Guard came down in one of our exhibition games. And so if our delegation had 35 people, there were 35 National Guard members who, before the game, they took the American flag off their military uniform and gave it to us. Wow. And I mean, I'm getting chills just talking about this. And it was like, you know, hey, we want you to have this so that you guys know what you're representing when you go over there. And so I was in Tokyo, I was the one who was writing out the lineup and putting it up. And so I took my flag and I posted it as a part of our lineup every single day for the guys to see, for just to be that little reminder. So, you know, I wound up getting the lineup card from the very first game. And so that's something that, you know, I think was, you know, just on a quick thought, something that's like very personal, very special to me. That's very sentimental, that, you know, I'm going to frame that and put it on the wall for sure, because of just, you know, the overall meaning of what that first game was all about, what the flag meant, and kind of putting those things together without a doubt.
That's very cool. And then, you know, we put up with, I guess it was maybe 6 years of Catherine Tappan bragging about Rutgers while she was here at Nesson. So I saw the picture. I saw the Rutgers Love Fest moment. But she's wonderful, isn't she? She does such a great job.
Yeah, she's a much better representative of Rutgers University than me or Todd or Patrick Kivlehan, that's for sure. It was great to have some yeah. New Jersey love and some fans. You know, she brought a decent-sized crew to our last two games, and so that was nice to have them in the stands.
And last but not least, give us something about learning through jet lag. Help us through the next trip. What have you learned over these last few trips?
The body's incredible with how it adjusts or doesn't adjust. The wake ups in the middle of the night where you feel like you've gotten the most restful sleep on earth, and you look at the clock and you've only been sleeping for a couple hours. I mean, it's completely mind blowing, but you know, I'll be well adjusted here in a couple of days, no question.
Great. We appreciate the time, Darren. I know it's been a busy stretch returning. Thanks for dropping by. We really do.
Tom, I appreciate it, man.
See you at Fenway. Great conversation with Darren Fenster. And again, I know he won't express the outrage at the lack of an Olympic medal, but the team sport coaches should absolutely get a gold. It's hard to imagine that Herb Brooks didn't get a medal for winning the Miracle on Ice back in 1980, but the Olympics are what the Olympics are. And by the way, keep your eye out for Darren Fenster. He is a guy who's moving up the ranks very quickly and certainly has a great career ahead of him. Still a young man in the coaching game. You will no doubt see him as a regular fixture at the major league level soon. I want to thank him for dropping by, spending some time and fighting jet lag a little longer to join us. And we want to thank you, as always, for joining us here on the TC and Company podcast. We'll see you back on Nesson as the Red Sox homestand continues. But for now, for all of us, thanks again for dropping by. We'll talk to you soon.